Hello and welcome to The Download. I'm your host, Dave Richardson, and it is a wintry Stu's Days. Stu, are you keeping warm?
I'm doing my best, Dave. I got my wool coat on here today, so I'm doing pretty well.
Wow. Yeah. Wow, but you're up in the attic, eh? Is it a little warmer than the rest of the house or colder? What kind of heat you got going up in there?
Well, I'm frugal when it comes to the temperature in the house, so I like to keep it in the kind of 65 to 67 range.
Oh.
So, you know, kind of growing up in the if you're cold, put a sweater on era. And I got the rads pretty much turned off on the third floor because all the heat rises, so it's fresh up here. It's fresh up here.
Oh, it is fresh. Eh? Okay, so I was thinking maybe you're there because again that heat rising aspect, and then you sit up in the warm part of the house while you freeze out your family.
Yeah, well, you know, and you get in these old rad houses, and if you get the rads on the third floor, then you end up having the window open, and it's negative in the basement, and you know, kind of, it's not the easiest system to keep the house all at the same temperature. So I think I finally figured it out over all the years. I got it all fine tuned here.
And then just for the record, Stu is saying rads, like radiators, not rats. Stu does not have rats in his house. I often get caught on that. I say rads, and people who don't have never had a radiator in their house, like some of the older houses in Toronto that I've lived in too, they think you're saying rats, and that's just not at all the case.
No rats.
But what has been kind of rats, Stu, has been, and this is a question that I'm getting a lot of right now. So let's just take it straight on from advisors and investors, and we've just done a series, as you know, with investment managers from all around the world who have mandates in all different areas of the world, geographic generally, and you always zoom in on the U.S. and the U.S. has done very, very well. It's outperformed, and particularly small parts of the U.S. market have outperformed, so valuations are higher. And you say, well, hey, we've been listening to you and Stu and others for several years, and all these other portfolio managers, and they say, oh, the U.S. is, the valuations are high, and all these other, the valuations better, so you're going to see a rotation, and we just keep waiting and waiting and waiting and waiting, and it just never happens. What do we say at this point about, you know, valuation? Because I know you and I believe in this, and we like to zoom out and look big picture, longer term, maybe more so than maybe newer investors or you know, investors who, you know, we always want to do as well as we can day to day. But what's most important is that we do well long term. What do you think is, how should people be thinking about this again, as we're going to say that, you know, American valuation's high, rest of the world relatively inexpensive, we should be leaning more there. How do you square all of this together for investors?
Yeah, it's you know, it's a great question. It's always kind of top of mind. It seems more topical recently.
Yeah,
I think there's a couple of things to, you know, think about. You know, the first is, you know, the promise to the equity investor is to say, you know, earnings across a broad group of companies have historically grown around 7%. And those companies historically have had a collective dividend yield between 1% and 2%. So if I paid a certain valuation going in, and I had the same valuation when I left, then I would have collected the 7% earnings growth and the 1% to 2% dividend yield. And there's a lot of companies that have kind of delivered on that promise for a very long period of time. More recently, you know, the companies delivering on that promise have been overweighted to a handful of big US technology companies. So the percentage of the earnings growth that has come from these companies has gone up. And the rest of the companies, they've been solid yet unspectacular,
yeah,
relatively speaking. And in some cases, those other companies pay a lot more in dividends as well. So it's not the same earnings hurdle that goes on in that equation. But you know, what it's kind of end up doing is it's the combination of that earnings profile being above average, all the discussion around American exceptionalism, the strength in the U.S. dollar, it has, and, you know, for lack of a better word, kind of sucked a lot of capital into the United States interested in these returns, and it becomes a little bit self-fulfilling.
Yeah.
And there's nothing wrong with these businesses. It's just that, you know, what you always have to be worried about as an investor is something getting to an extreme where, you know, it could be a more significant headwind to my longer term performance. And I, you know, we've talked about this in the past, like two of my all time favorite investment articles were both written by Warren Buffett, not surprisingly. Yes. But the first was in 2000, and the stock market traded at 26 times earnings.
Yeah.
And he said, stocks are not really going to go anywhere. And the premise there was not that earnings were not going to keep growing. It's just that at the time, the long-term average valuation of the stock market was around 15. So if you took 26 divided by 15, you were about 65% overvalued relative to that long-term average. So that if you had a 10-year horizon and your earnings grew at 7 and your valuation normalized, you would lose 6.5% a year in valuation and the stock market wouldn't go anywhere.
Yeah.
So, you know, so that then brings us back to today where people say, well, you know, stock market's around 22 times earnings, which also seems elevated relative to that long-term average of 15. So, you know, 22 divided by 15 is not quite as elevated, maybe, you know, 40% relative to that long-term history. And I want to touch on this in just a moment. You know, so if earnings grew at 7 and you had to normalize valuations, that would be like a 4% headwind. So instead of getting like 7 in earnings, 1 to 2 in dividend, you'd have to have that, you know, subtract that 4% headwind in dividend or in valuation change. Two things that have really changed over time is the first is the margins of business have really expanded. You know, if we look at something like Microsoft, you know, 10 years ago, their margins were 30%. Today, they're 50%. So margins have expanded. And when margins expand, the free cash generation of a dollar of earnings goes up. You know, and this is kind of trying to subtract maintenance capital, not just investing capital as well. And also inside of earnings is a lot of R&D investment, which is expensed. So, you know, there is this idea that American business is more profitable, and these more profitable companies, they exist all over the world, but they're predominantly U.S. oriented companies. So, you know, perhaps the valuation doesn't need to go all the way back to 15 times to normalize. Perhaps it's a higher number. Maybe it's 18, 19 times. You know, there needs to be some risk premium relative to fixed income, but it also acknowledges that there's growth and all sorts of things. So you could boil it down. You could say that, you know, the stock market is overvalued by, you know, some percentage that does represent a headwind to long-term returns. The final point that, you know, really comes to the fore and you know, we've talked about, you know, financial stocks doing better, and we've talked about the slope of the yield curve. You know, the American stock market is heavily exposed to technology businesses and less exposed to, you know, some of the more conventional sectors, of which one of them is financials. The global markets are more exposed to financials. Like if we think about the Canadian stock market, we look at European stock markets and things like this. And if the yield curve goes back to having a positive slope and stays there for some time, which it looks like it might, you know, perhaps, you know, there'll be some room for some of those global exchanges to start to deliver on those longer term earnings power things. So, you know, when we look at these statistics, unfortunately, you know, none of them are timing statistics. They're not, you know, mechanisms where I can go out and say, well, just because I know this, it's going to start working tomorrow. But they are, you know, road signs that as drivers, we need to pay some attention to, you know, going to generate, you know, some of those longer term performances. You know, when you get into, you know, stock specific examples, and we look at some of the enthusiasm that can go in a stock's path, you know, you can just look at countless examples of stocks that go up a long way, stocks that go down a long way. And you know, what we're trying to do as investors is tilt our portfolios towards those positive options. And by positive options, I mean areas where we think the multiple can stay the same and the earnings can grow, or areas where the earnings can grow and maybe even the multiple can expand. And then we kind of get a double-barreled approach to return potential. So, you know, when we have these discussions and we look at some of these, you know, tried and tested models over long periods of time, and they suggest, you know, things for us to think about, we're going to naturally think about them. And then as for the exact timing of those things, you know, just like, you know, I love dollar cost averaging. The timing around those things also is something that you often kind of dollar cost average around.
Yep.
Because that, you know, because we know they're not timing. We know they're not timing vehicles. Like, we know that when we see all these statistics, they don't forecast imminent change. They're more like more of a longer range kind of weather forecast.
Yeah, well, I guess I'm cheering for some of these other markets, because I've often been described as solid yet unspectacular, as you described the markets outside the U.S. So I kind of have a kindred spirit with these other markets. But I think, like, one of the ways to think about it, because, you know, I'm starting, as I mentioned on some of the podcast, I'm doing a lot more hiking these days, and I go and I'm going to hike up this mountain, and it's you know, it's 1,000 meters high. And I go, you know, I look at the time on the estimated time to get up there, and it's going to take, it says, you know, it takes the average hiker about an hour to hike up there. So I go, I'm carrying a little more weight than the average hiker and a little more age. So I'm going to do it in an hour and a half. I'm going to get up in an hour and a half. But then that sort of sets your, you know, your expectation around the returns, which is your 7% plus your 1-2% dividend. Right, which means over a long period of time, the length of say over 10 years, I'm going to expect to get my 9%, right, or 20 years, like over 9%.
Yep.
So the same thing. It's going to take me an hour and a half to get up the hill. So but I get going. I'm pretty excited. I'm going to get to the top of that hill. I'm going to beat. They say an hour and a half for the old guy. He's going to get up there faster. I start the first half of racing along. I'm looking at my watch. It's telling me my pace. It's like, whoa! I'm going to get up there, and I'm going to get up there in 40 minutes. And I keep putting, and then all of a sudden, the reality kicks in. I'm breathing heavy, and then I looked out. Now it's I've run another 100 meters higher, and now it's saying it's going to take me an hour, and then I'm slowing down. I'm stopping. I'm looking at the view. I'm taking a sip of water, and then sure enough, by the time I get there, I got there in an hour and a half. But I did a lot of it. I got ahead of the pace, like way ahead of the pace at the front end of the first half of the climb. And then I just fell back to earth over time, which is, you know, the saying when things kind of get ahead of themselves in terms of the valuations, which is how much you're paying for the earnings. You expect it to be more like 16, 17, and now you're paying 22. Okay. But at some point that valuation is going to come back down. You know, if there's not a reason for it not to be higher, and you mentioned a couple of reasons why it could be a little bit higher than normal now,
yeah,
but it's going to get back to that pace. So you're going to end up over the long term. It's going to take you that same time to get there. And so you want to take that step back and look at valuations, because it's not going to tell you, I don't know exactly when I'm going to start to slow down as I'm running up the hill. Well, I might have had a good breakfast that day, a couple extra coffees. Maybe I'm in a little better shape. I have a bottle of wine the night before. So I do end up my first half is really fast, but generally I'm going to take that hour and a half either way. And the same thing goes with stocks. Eventually things kind of slow down and settle down and normalize. And that's what we're talking about here. So I don't know exactly when I'm going to slow down, but I do know I'm going to slow down, and it's going to take me that similar time to get up there. Whereas and with stocks as well, we don't know exactly when the valuations are going to matter, but there's going to come a point in time where it matters, right? And then, you know, you want to make sure you've been conscious of the fact that, you know, conscious of the valuations and relative assets that you can buy.
Yeah, no question. Like, I'm just kind of overwhelmed. I thought you were like Rocky Balboa there climbing the steps of Philadelphia. You look so strong, and then you kind of petered out a little bit in your example there. So,
it's more like Rocky IV when he was in Russia, you know, in the snow and going up the mountain, with the car, that kind of a thing. Yeah.
And of course, the other thing to weave in is, like, you know, for a long time, recently anyways, bond yields were very low. And, you know, there, you know, when we get to around 5 on the bond yield and we're comparing it to all those, scenarios, you know, 5 doesn't look so bad. You know, and it's been a while since there was an alternative, of that realm. And, you know, the other thing we didn't talk about, which we also know almost happens to every long-term investor, is at some point there will be a concern about a slowdown, and that often, you know, drives the you know, the bonds lower, and that's often when you get the, you know, the kind of valuation change in a bit more of a hurry if you start to see some downward revisions to the estimates with which valuation is applied.
Yeah. Now to zoom this in and make it a little more relevant to what we've been watching over the last couple of days, we saw the Trump inauguration yesterday. We saw all the executive orders and a lot of the talk about the, at least the economic plan that they have in place and the expectations of how it will work out and drive better economic growth. And, you know, one of the things that, you know, you might point to in, say, Canada or Europe is that the regulatory environment is tougher than the regulatory environment in the U.S. So there's a competitive advantage
yep.
to companies and stocks in the U.S. Now, the U.S. is even talking about the part of this policy is let's take regulations back even farther. And we could do a whole other podcast on the short and long term benefits of regulation versus not regulation. But I see the European Union is out, the head of the European Union's out overnight saying, well, one of the ways they're gonna be competitive with the U.S. is by doing the same thing, starting to look at regulation and rolling it back. So there's always something that tends to come into play that sort of shifts that balance back, and again makes it that point where valuation is important at that point in time.
Yeah, that's for sure. And like anything, you know, the analogy that always fits the bill on any piece of news, really. But you know, when you drop a stone in the water and you watch the ripples. And it's often, you know, the third or fourth ripple away that you have to really think about. So, you know, getting excited about deregulation in the United States today may not, you know, that's kind of known, right? Like that's yeah. an area that, you know, is a real focal point for investors versus, you know, if the European Union wakes up and says, we're going to get focused on deregulation or yeah. other areas that haven't historically
Canada.
Been. Yeah, it's that yeah. small rate of change that that investors often get very focused on, not what is in the current focus.
Yeah. Well, whether you like them or loathe them, the new president is not throwing pebbles or stones. He's throwing boulders into the
yeah.
water. So so it's a little bit more of that. But the same thing applies, right, Stu? No matter how bombastic or big it is, it's still the same idea. Around the way the waves spread out from the initial drop in the water.
100%. And, you know, the one thing that we know from time is or all of history really is that, you know, just as when we think something is stable and in place, there's a change.
Yeah. So. And that's why as you know, something we haven't talked about, we don't talk a lot about politics, and we do try to keep politics out, although we recognize the impact that policy and policy in different countries and towards different industries make a difference in terms of the performance of a stock and the ability of the company to grow, et cetera. I think the big thing that you walk away with for Canadian investors who have a lot of concerns about what happens politically down in the U.S. is just your analogy there that, you know, not to, you know, short term feels big, but longer term, you know, hey, just think things are going to just play out. And historically, your 7% earnings and your 1 to 2% dividends, that's the way things play out over time, kind of no matter what's happened, wars, famines, diseases, everything.
That's right, Dave.
Wow, you I feel solid, not spectacular. I thought I was going to get a yeah. That's it, Dave.
Well, some people say solid yet unspectacular. I say solid and unspectacular because I that's the way a kind of a dividend guy rolls, right? I like the two combined.
Wow, I think I just got a compliment. I think I'm a dividend guy too.
Yeah,
we should all be dividend guys, though, right? Because dividends are good. But we'll cover that, I'm sure, in another podcast, and we'll get back to dollar cost averaging as usual. But Stu, a spectacular Stu's Days for you today.
Great, thanks very much, Dave.
This recording has been provided by RBC Global Asset Management Inc. for informational purposes only, and is not intended to be investment or financial advice. You should consult your own legal, accounting, tax, investment, or financial planning advisors before engaging in any transactions.